We are moving into a new season in the church year, the season after Pentecost. We give a lot of liturgical attention to the beginning and the end of Jesus' story, right? Christmas and Easter get top billing, but actually the majority of the year is focused on the middle of his story, the meat of his ministry. Over the next 6 months, we're going to get wise teachings and enlightening parables. We'll meet interesting characters and be given many good lessons to ponder. But today, in chapter 9 of Matthew, we start this journey with a reminder that one of Jesus' main activities, perhaps the thing he was best known for and most condemned for during his life, was healing people. Today we get two healing stories sandwiched together. The first tells of a leader of the local synagogue, a person who we might expect to be opposed or at least skeptical of Jesus, coming to him in desperation because his daughter has died. This man of some import was, like any parent in this situation, willing to do anything to save her. So he kneels and begs Jesus to come and work his wonders on her. And Jesus does, without question, tenderly taking the girl by the hand and restoring her to life. But wedged into this story is a healing of someone from the other end of the social spectrum. A woman plagued by bleeding that would not stop. For 12 years, she had suffered. This would not only have weakened her immensely and been dangerous to her health, but her type of bleeding would have made her an outcast, for she would have been viewed as impure, unclean, untouchable. So one can only imagine the state she was in when, in similar desperation to the leader of the synagogue, she pushes her way to Jesus, hoping to touch even just the fringe of his cloak and receive relief from her ailment. And when she does, Jesus turns to her and does not send her away, but grants this outcast the gift of health restored, of hope returned. Daughter, he lovingly calls her, take heart. Your faith has made you well. Two beautiful stories of healing from people of two different ends of life's spectrum. In both cases, either touching either of these women, a corpse, or one who was bleeding like that, would have made Jesus himself unclean by his religious standards. But that is of no concern to him. What is of concern to him is restoring these two women to wholeness and fullness of life. In fact, all of chapter 9 of Matthew is concerned with this theme. Our passage is preceded in the chapter by Jesus healing a paralyzed man, and it is followed by him restoring sight to two blind men and speech to one who is mute. It is literally a litany of healings across the chapter. Which is a good reminder that for all the spiritual power and wisdom that Jesus possessed and imparted, for all his concern with the state of people's souls, he also cared deeply about people's bodies. He was physician as much as he was prophet, priest, and king, because to Jesus, bodies matter. Every body matters. And so he touched that untouchable woman, and he brought the leader's daughter back to life. He gave healing to the desperate and to the hopeless, food to those who hungered. For Jesus was here to meet physical needs as much as spiritual ones, which is not always how we understand his purpose, right? But it does make sense if you remember what we were talking about last week, that the creative force of God is the establisher and animator of the bodies which we have. And if we believe in the Word made flesh, that our God took on a body, did not spurn that physical reality, but embraced it entirely, and in so doing, hallowed our physical existence. If we believe that, then it would make sense that Jesus would come not just to save souls, but to save bodies as well. Because bodies matter to God. Every body matters. I think, knowing you all as I do, that generally we would agree with that idea, that bodies matter, right? Most people try to take care of their bodies and understand their importance, and despite the fact that our bodies are often for us sources of disappointment and disgruntlement and deficiency and dissatisfaction, we can usually, in the big picture, appreciate that they are worth valuing as a gift from God. And at least in theory, then, we can understand the broader principle that if our bodies matter, then other bodies matter as well, right? Then why do we treat so many bodies as expendable? Here's something I learned this week. There's a chemical gas called ethylene oxide, whose main use is to sterilize medical equipment before it is sent off to hospitals. It is highly effective at doing this and has become ubiquitous in the industry. But about 10 years ago, the EPA determined that this compound was at least 30 times more dangerous to adults and 60 times more dangerous to children than they had previously thought. Encountering it regularly, even in small doses, can lead to brain and central nervous damage and increased rates of breast cancer, lymphoma, and leukemia. The factories which use this chemical, it turns out, are often located in residential areas. There's one right outside of Richmond, actually, in Varina, Virginia. And like many of these plants across the country, this one is situated in a community that is predominantly populated by people of color. Of the roughly 100,000 people who live within 5 miles of this particular facility, only about a quarter are white. Now, having discovered how toxic this chemical is, the EPA produced a new set of stricter guidelines to ensure it would not pollute surrounding areas. These guidelines went into effect in 2024 and started to help better control its use. But in the spring of 2025, the EPA abruptly changed course. All of a sudden, exemptions to those new restrictions were offered and widely granted. All that was required was an email asking for a reprieve. And then, just this past March, a couple months ago, those new stricter rules were rolled back entirely, leaving the residents of Varina, Virginia, to fend for themselves. These recent EPA rollbacks are going to jeopardize tens of thousands of bodies across the country. Notably, bodies of people who have historically had their bodily autonomy and agency repeatedly violated. But that's hardly the only example of our societal willingness to treat some bodies as expendable. We allow 40,000 lives a year to be ended by guns, machines whose main purpose is to tear through flesh, to destroy bodies. We have seen bodies dragged out of cars, off of front porches, out of partners' arms, and impounded in human kennels without any due process or charge. We allow healthcare to be beyond the reach or refused to certain people and not others, resulting in unconscionable disparities in access and outcome. We now withhold medicines and equipment from other countries which could save them from entirely treatable diseases, leaving their people to die. We cut subsidies that help hungry people eat. We let poison leak into some people's drinking water and coal dust into some people's air and accept that as the price of economic advancement. We cannot legitimately tolerate those things and still nod our heads and say, everybody matters. And we especially cannot tolerate those things as people of faith, because the health and well-being of the human body is of concern to God. The healing of the human body was of concern to Jesus and central to his ministry. Therefore, we, as Christians, as followers of Jesus Christ, must be as concerned with saving bodies as we are with saving souls. That is a faith-based concern as much as a sociological, medical, or political one, because our faith teaches us that every body bears the imprint of its Creator and therefore deserves the dignity therein, the chance to live lives that are healthy and whole. And that's why I am glad that our church has determined that health needs to be one of our areas of focus as we move forward in growing our own Faith in Action ministries, because we have looked around and we can see there is much work to be done by churches, by people of faith, to challenge the systems and the power brokers who treat so many bodies as expendable. Work to be done in generating opportunities for healing and health in our community and in our city. Work to be done in lifting up and supporting those around us who are already trying to do this work and fighting this battle on behalf of those who cannot fight it for themselves. We are beginning to mobilize in that direction, and I'm excited to see where it leads, because we have the power to help heal people. And we must. Because when Jesus calls us to follow him, he calls us right into the hard and holy work of healing. Not just in the spiritual or metaphorical sense, but in the literal sense. Making people well, keeping people whole. That is our work as those who seek to follow him, because bodies matter. Every body matters. We need to start acting like it. Amen.